Hello everyone and welcome back to Drop the Gloves with Wichita Thunder head coach Malcolm Cameron. Drop the Gloves is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Wichita coach questions about the Thunder, hockey or sports in general, or just seek the coach's wisdom about life events. In this week's episode, the coach talks with us about the 4-0 start to the season. He tells us who he believes are going to be some of the bright stars in the NHL coming up. And should the coach do a show on fashion because of what a sharp dresser he is? Let's find out on Drop the Gloves. So let's welcome back Coach Cameron. Coach, do you have team updates for us?
Just a couple of guys banged up here. So imagine we'll have a couple of changes to our lineup. As well as Samuel Labrec decided to go back to Europe for his team that he played for last year. Financially, it was just a deal he couldn't turn down to get a two-year guaranteed contract where he's basically going to triple his salary tax-free from what he made here. So I think he thought about it, you know, being a 5'8" defenseman, you know, and really what was the ceiling for him in terms of opportunity to move up. And with a lucrative European offer, he can go over there and play for 5 or 6 years and bank some good money.
Can't argue with that at all.
Yeah, we're sorry to see him go because he's a good player and a quality guy, but again, we have 7 good defensemen, 6 here right now, 7 with Dornbosch and Bakersfield, and Bakersfield's got a few guys nicked up, banged up there, but when they get healthy, they're going to be up to 9 defensemen, so they can't play them all. So I would anticipate at some point in time maybe we'll get somebody from them.
You start out 4-0 on the season. What do you think are some keys that have helped you to get to that point?
Good goaltending, first and foremost, timely scoring, and we're seeing to get in scoring from all 3 lines, so that makes you a dangerous team whenever you can have, you know, 3 lines finding ways to contribute in the scoreboard each night, but also playing good defensively.
One thing that really jumps out at me about the team so far this season is you've scored first in every game, never trailed in a game this season. So how do you get off to a fast start that enables that kind of thing?
Just motivate. Guys are self-motivators here. I think they like playing at home. Hopefully we'll translate that to a quick start on the road tomorrow night in Tulsa. But I think our guys have a real good mental focus. They're coming to the rink, getting prepared for the game, and they're ready to go.
The penalty killing has been really solid for you since the opening night of the season. What were some adjustments that you made?
Well, just the ability to pre-scout. Going into that first game, we kind of went in blind because we had no video of their power play. And it was almost like had to figure it out on the fly type of thing. It's unfortunate we don't have video available for the exhibition games here in our league. So they played 2 games and they changed their power play up both games. So it's hard to evaluate what Indy was going to do once we have a chance. And these players nowadays are such visual people. They have to see it to understand what you're trying to do. And in our pre-scout meetings, the guys have been very, very good as far as the details. So I think that's one of the reasons why our PK has been good.
Whose performances have really stood out for you so far?
Just about everybody's found a way to contribute. I don't think we've had, one weak link. Even some of the players that have only gotten into 1 game out of 4, like Morasti and Ike Cabellas and Sam Tebow have all found ways to help us win each and every game. So right now we don't have any passengers. So I'd like to say all 22 guys right now have had a hand in this 4-0 start.
Kyle Platt's our named Player of the Week today, too. I just saw before I came over here.
So. Yep. Yeah, I mean, Platt's is, he's a guy who had a tough year last year in the American Hockey League. I think he only had the 1 goal. And he's come down here to find some confidence. And he's playing with 2 really good players in Matt DeBlau and Zach O'Brien. And they've had chemistry right from the first practice. So he's a quality kid. He's a quality pro. He works hard every day in the gym and video sessions and on the ice in practice. So I'm happy to see him finding success.
You head out on the road going to Tulsa tomorrow night before heading to Kansas City. Tulsa was a team the Thunder kind of struggled against last season. So what are some things you look to try to do different against them this year?
Well, the teams are so different. Their team's more similar, in terms of personnel than we are. I mean, really, you look at our lineup, we've only got 2 guys that were here all of last season in DeBlau and Marcotte. Jeremy Beaudry playing the last 15 games of the season with us, and then Dornbosch is up in the American League. So our roster is so different. Our personnel is a lot different. So I think we posed maybe more of a challenge to them than we did last year. We found some late success. We actually won our last couple of games against Tulsa last year. They're a team that's very meticulous in what they do. They stick with the basic structure, and they're very good at it. They have a good power play, good penalty killing always, and we just have to go in there and outwork them and utilize our team speed.
Well, let's head to fan questions. We start with Jack, who says, "It is cool that we can hear your voice all over the arena. Does that booming voice come naturally, or did you have to work on that?"
No, that comes naturally. I was born with a coach's voice, so nobody can ever, none of my players can ever accuse me of not hearing me when I'm calling their name. So, no, that all comes natural.
I'm sure with that memory, too, that really makes it hard for them to get away with very much.
Yeah, it does. That's for darn sure.
Gina would like to know, she says, "Kyle Platzer looks so skilled and fast. She's surprised that he's not playing in the AHL.
Well, you know what? Sometimes guys have to take a step back and take two steps forward. And, you know, Kyle's a guy who, when he came out of junior hockey, played right in the American League, and maybe it should have been a situation where he started out in the ECHL where he could have played more quality minutes in his first year pro. He's still a young player, and he's getting better each and every day. So that just tells you the caliber of our league when you see guys like him who've been in the American League have to take a step back and how well he's doing here. So, you know, he keeps playing. I know his goal is to get back there one day, and you know, he's doing everything right now that he can to show that he deserves to be there.
Wes would like to know, he says, "The Thunder have taken a lot of high-sticking penalties early this season. Is that just part of being aggressive or something you're working with the players on?"
No, I think we've been super aggressive on our forecheck and pressuring in the defensive zone. And, you know, guys in the summertime, it's no hitting, right, when you play summer hockey. So now that they're back into the contact, those are just little habits you have to reestablish in your game, making sure you keep your stick in the ice, stick on the puck when you go in to lay the shoulder out. And it's just a matter of guys being too aggressive right now.
Phil asks, he says, "Do you remember those injuries where Richard Zednik and Clint Malarchuk had their neck cut by a skate? Does it surprise you that doesn't happen more often?"
You know, sometimes it does, but players are, you know, very careful where they don't, they try not to, you know, get involved with a vulnerable player. But I think the equipment now is so much better and more protective, especially the shoulder pads and the jerseys ride up a little bit higher on a player's neck. So I think what you're seeing more now is skate cuts in the back of the legs as opposed to in the upper body.
Daniel would like to know, he says, "Penalties have obviously been added and changed over the years in hockey. What is something that you think should be a penalty that is not, or something you would like to see ended as a penalty?"
Well, it's tough to say. I think the penalties right now are pretty good. You know, I think it's just really how the referees interpret a penalty. You know, you see our game on Saturday night here, I thought the referee did a really good job of managing the game. Each team only had really, I think we had one full power play and a short one, and they only had one power play as well. And I thought the stick infractions were good. I thought the guys kept their sticks down. I think sometimes referees get, you know, feel that they have to call something that might not be even of consequence to the play. I'd like to see the referees, you know, call the game that way and let the players decide it. If it's something that nullifies a scoring threat or, you know, has a massive change in the game, then it has to be called. But, you know, a little ticky-tack thing where a guy wraps a guy in the shin pads with a stick, that's not slashing, you know. You know, things like that, I just think it's a better interpretation of the rules that we have that'll make the game better.
Would you like to see kind of a better understanding of things? Because, like, I remember last year, I think a couple of times we talked about hand passes that were called against somebody, and you thought neither of those were hand passes. Just not a clear enough idea of what's...
Well, a hand pass is supposed to be when you knock the puck forward and your team plays it and gains a benefit from it. You know, I think we took a couple of penalties last year where they called closing your hand on the puck, where we really didn't. You know, the puck was knocked forward by the back of the glove, and I think that was kind of a thing they were looking for a lot last year, you know, closing your hand in the puck and carrying it and things like that. I think they got a little bit too much of that. Yeah, I haven't seen any of it this year, so there always seems to be a flavor of the week in terms of penalties. Excuse me.
Sheila asks, do you feel you are at an age with these players where they view you as a father figure? And if so, how does that affect the way you interact with them?
I wouldn't say that because these guys are pros. I think in junior hockey, a lot of the time you take upon that role as a father figure because the players are 16 to 20 and a lot of them are away from home for the first time. As pro guys, all these players have been on their own, you know, for years and years and everything like that. You take on the role more or less as a sterner disciplinarian, somebody that they can talk to and are comfortable to talk to and share their life with as well. So I think in order to be a good coach at the professional level, is you can't just show up at the rink and not have conversation with your players. You got to let them know how much you care, that you care about them as people, you care about their families, and I think that's how you get the most out of people.
Alan Assey says, with the Olympics coming up and the NHL not sending players this year, will that affect the ECHL teams? Will they be sending players?
I don't think so. It'll be the majority of players that are playing high-level hockey in Europe. You know, probably ex-NHLers, you know, former American League All-Stars, guys like that that are playing in Europe. Team Canada every year plays in a tournament called the Spengler Cup every year over in Switzerland. And that's what it is. It's a collection of players that have, you know, played in the National Hockey League that are now playing their trade in Europe, and I think that's what you'll see.
Tyler has a couple of questions for you. He says, I don't know if you've watched any college hockey or pay any attention to that, but I was wondering your thoughts about St. Cloud State and if they have the D-line to be able to win the national title.
Well, I haven't watched any college games this year. I typically don't, probably till around December when I start thinking about players coming out for next season. So I couldn't give an honest evaluation of whether St. Cloud is a good team or a bad team as of yet.
We'll have to come back to that, Tyler. Tyler would also like to know, what are some of the bright young stars at the college or junior level that you think will be stars in the NHL one day?
Well, the college, I can't really say, but I follow still the Western Hockey League pretty regularly. Not as much the OHL or the Quebec League. Probably will the Quebec League more this year because I got buddies that coach in the league. But one guy who's a really good young player in the Western Hockey League, who's actually an Edmonton Oilers prospect, is Tyler Benson. He was a second-round pick of the Oilers, first overall draft pick of the Western Hockey League. Guy that's been really plagued by injuries the last 2 years. He just can't seem to be healthy. But when he's on the ice, he's a tremendous talent. One of my former players, Michael Rasmussen, who was ninth overall of the Detroit Red Wings, plays for the Tri-City Americans in the Western Hockey League. He's a 6'6", 225 centerman who I think is going to be a dominant player in the National Hockey League one day. And another former player, Jordy Bellreeve, with the Lethbridge Hurricanes, signed as a free agent, was undrafted in this past June's draft, went to the Penguins camp as a free agent and ended up signing a 3-year entry-level deal with the Penguins. Wow. You know, this guy, he's been a dominant player all through his young years, but he's kind of tapped out in his growth. He's a 5'10 centerman, but he's 190 pounds, fast, shoots the puck a ton, and lots of character. So I was really, really proud of him that he was able to get an NHL contract.
Well, that's pretty cool. Adam also has a couple of questions for you. He says, you talked last year about how the cost is keeping many out of the sport of hockey. Is there a way to draw greater interest at a lesser expense, like how football does flag football for younger kids? Because he'd like to see hockey grow.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's, the cost of equipment, the cost of ice time. Just for an example, my youngest boy is playing hockey here in Wichita this year. Last year he played in Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia, where the majority of teams are all within a 20-minute drive. So he could play probably within an hour's radius, he could play up to 20-some-odd different opponents, you know, with only traveling 1 hour. Here, you know, Wichita doesn't have any close opponents, so all the trips are hotel nights, you know, for my wife. Me, I can't go because we're always on the road or playing. But you know, they've already been to Arkansas, they're going to Omaha, Nebraska, they're going to Colorado Springs, they're going to Oklahoma City. They're going to end up in Kearney, Nebraska. So those are 5 or 6 trips there that it's gas, food, and hotels. And that adds up on top of your registration fees. excuse me. It's unfortunate here in the United States where there's not a lot of cities that have hockey rinks where you can just drive down the road, you know, and then you add on the cost of ice time and hockey sticks aren't cheap even for young kids. My older boy, he uses $300 sticks, you know, and he's 16, and he goes through a couple of months. So just the price of equipment, he wears $1,000 skates. and even more for goaltenders. You know, Sylvain and I were talking this morning. He's got a young fellow who plays in the Quebec Major Junior League as a goaltender. When you get to that level and it's not a pay-for-play, it's a nice break for parents not to have to buy equipment. But I can't even imagine the price of goaltending equipment when you're 14 and 15. I mean, that's thousands upon thousands of dollars. And then you know, even my 16-year-old son, he trains all summer, you know, he's on the ice 3-4 days a week. So there's ice time costs. He trains at the gym. If he's got a personal trainer, there's a cost associated with that. He went to Montreal this year for a week, a hockey camp. So that's a flight and food and, you know, all that stuff. It really adds up. I know there's parents that we're friends with in Florida that it's a $20,000 per year cost for their kids to play hockey.
Wow.
I take it when sticks are broken, they can't be, like, redone.
No, unfortunately, back in my day when aluminum sticks first came in, that's when they got away from wood and fiberglass. You had a shaft and a blade. So if the shaft broke, you could still use the blade. If the blade broke, you still had the shaft. The technology just keeps getting better and better and better. The sticks are so light now. I mean, comparison. My son grabbed one of my old sticks this summer. He said, "Dad, it's like a tree trunk. You know, how did you use this?" And the technology is so good. That's why the players shoot so hard nowadays. They're able to stick handle so much better than they did years ago. But there's a cost associated with that. They break a lot easier. So, you know, a typical team, I wouldn't even know what a National Hockey League team stick budget is, but ours would be around $60,000 for sticks.
Wow. Unbelievable. Adam would also like to know, with all these sports, quote-unquote, allowing kneeling during the national anthem, except for hockey, do you see this making it more popular with fans?
I don't know. I guess it all depends on your politics, but... you know, I believe that we're very fortunate, whether we're Canadian-American or, in my case, a Canadian living in the United States, we're very fortunate to have a great quality of life living in this country. And for me, it's a respect factor for the people that have given us that freedom, you know, that have laid down the ultimate sacrifice for us to make sure that we have a great quality of life for us and our kids. So I that's why I stand for the national anthem, because I'm proud to be living here, and... when I'm in Canada, obviously proud to be Canadian. So I unfortunately find it very, very sad that we can't find a different way of protest. You know, I understand everybody wants to protest something, or they feel very strongly about. I just think, especially with professional athletes, they're getting an opportunity to make lots of money and have a great quality of life playing a game that they love. And I think there's maybe a different forum for it.
Samuel asks, how about the World Series prediction for us, Coach?
Well, I live close to Houston. I still have a house down in Beaumont, Texas, so I got to go with the Astros.
And our last question for the week comes from Lindsay. She says, you're the sharpest dresser in the league. Any chance of a Coach C show on fashion?
Well, I don't know. It's the first time I've ever been told I'm the sharpest dresser in the league. But I got to give my wife a lot of credit. She picks out my suits, my ties, and my shirts on game day. Even when she wasn't here with me last year, I used to call her and say, hey, what do you think for today? So I got to give her a lot of credit with my wardrobe.
Maybe she needs a show then. This is
what she may. She may, because I'm not much of a guy, you know, in terms of fashion or haberdashery. She's the one.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us this week, Coach.
No problem.
We want to thank Coach Cameron for joining us on Drop the Gloves this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Wichita Thunder coach, please send them to us at malcolmcameron@minorleaguesportsreport.com. That's malcolmcameron@minorleaguesportsreport.com. Please have your questions to us by Sunday evening so we can give the coach a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Drop the Gloves.